Hello and welcome to the Doc Talk podcast. I'm Kenny Walter, Assistant Managing Editor of ACP Live. As more and more biologics come on the market, investigators are looking at new targeted drugs for patients with IBD. And with the recent approval of risankizumab in June, the first ever IL-23 treatment for Crohn's disease, we may be on the horizon of just that. The risankizumab approval represents a big step toward a new class of IL-23 drugs for both ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. One doctor who has long been a proponent of the IL-23 treatments is Dr. Marla Dubinsky, co-director of the Susan and Leonard Feinstein IBD Center at Mount Sinai. Dr. Dubinsky joined me for the latest episode of Doc Talk to discuss the groundbreaking risankizumab approval and what the future is for IBD treatments. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Dubinsky.
Is that where like research is going? Is that kind of the new, like with, you know, biologics being more and more on the market, are we going to head towards the IL-23 version? So I figured you were a good person to talk to. I mean, you were.
Okay.
That was before risankizumab got approved, right?
Skyrizi was approved. It was supposed to be approved in March, by the way, but it was approved June 16th. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So I guess, I mean, you obviously, we've spoken about this in the past, but IL-23s, do you think that's where research is going to go in the future?
Yeah. I mean, I'll sort of give you where I think things are going is that, you know, when we all understood biologically that all roads lead to TNF, right? They are the end game, all immune inflammatory diseases. They all sort of every pathway ends in TNF, which made sense that it was one of the first cytokine-based, you know, monoclonals developed because we understood that there's a lot of this when there's inflammation. And, you know, through the amazing research of that group who developed the anti-TNF or, you know, discovered that as being a monoclonal and converting into a monoclonal antibody, the idea that we thought we understood the entirety of the immune system by just going to the end, right? If we can go to the end and shut the tap off at the end, you know, set up like you're actually putting a dam or something. The question is, can you go to the source of the water or the cascading? And are there pathways, what we call upstream, which means pathways that if they're turned up or down, that will influence the amount of TNF that is actually produced. And so once we started realizing the immune system is obviously much more complex than just TNF, and the question is, since there are some folks who just don't respond to anti-TNF mechanistically, right? So there's not everybody in the end does turning off or putting it, you know, a breaker at the end of TNF actually result in permanent anti-inflammatory or durable, sustainable, where you can be able to sort of shut the whole cascade down, that maybe you need to go above that in a group of patients or individuals because blocking TNF alone isn't shutting it off. And is that because not everyone makes TNF? I'd be pretty shocked if TNF is not a part of everybody's inflammatory or to response to infection of any kind, meaning a trigger of any kind, right? That's not what we're saying. But maybe you need more than or alternative to blocking TNF in order to actually really impact the inflammatory response for people with genetically determined disease. And there are a group of conditions that are driven predominantly upstream of, but is characterized by IL-23. And they similarly share the IL-23 receptor gene defect, the IL-23 gene, that is common among certain diseases and not common in other diseases. And probably the best example is rheumatoid arthritis is characterized predominantly by IL-6, and TNF is an endgame. But if you really wanted to maybe make more durable, sustainable change in the natural history of RA, you would want to block IL-6 and go upstream to TNF in that sense. And that's why a drug that targets IL-6 is approved, but also why a JAK inhibitor, which has heavy emphasis on IL-6 inhibition, makes sense that it works in rheumatoid arthritis. But funny enough, because the IL-23 genetic variant is not part of the genetic background of an RA patient, blocking IL-23, be it with combined with 12 with Stelara or moving forward, there is no treatment for RA that means blocking IL-23. There's a reason for that biologically. That is not the inherent biologic process that is intended to be blocked, right, in that sense.
In that disease.
So focusing even here, just at looking at the cytokine-based concepts, this is a New England Journal article that I can send you because it's actually going to help address a lot of what you're asking me and where my knowledge comes from, is an understanding, look, all roads lead to TNF, right? Everything is down here. But when you start to dissect JIA, Y23 is not approved for, it's an interleukin-1, and that's why anakinra is actually a treatment for JIA, because biologically IL-1 is a big player. And here on IL-23 is CDUC, psoriatic arthritis, psoriasis, makes sense. And then funny enough, ANGSPON and psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis actually is both an IL-17 as well as a 23. And that's sort of the fact that they share. And you could see here on the right, the darker gold, that IL-17 is in three different spaces. IL-23 is specific to those four, but is absolutely absent in RA and JIA. There's a reason for that. IL-6 is a true synovial problem, meaning the synovium is inflamed. In the arthritis of psoriatic arthritis, CDUC and psoriasis, it's actually an enthesitis, which is where the tendon inserts into the bone. It is not classic synovial inflammation, which is why if you have someone with a lot of different arthropathies in IBD, you have to know the difference between, is it a classic RA? Then you're going to use a JAK inhibitor. If it's classic enthesial, which is like your sacroiliitis and other sort of what we call enthesitis, where it's not a clearly swollen joint, but you can see where the tendon inserts on the bone on MRs, you can see is very inflamed. And it mainly is joint pain. It's not a classic arthritis in its sense when you think about a swollen joint. But it also shows you here. So joints, RA, psoriasis, but you can see that in the other diseases, peripheral joints can be there, but ANGSPON is the spine predominantly, but the spine could be in any of these diseases. But funny enough, the spine in a CDUC, psoriasis, and psoriatic is that enthesitis and not RA. So that's why you have to know the difference between true RA and not. And then you can see here, a ileum could also be involved in psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. So what you're starting to see is that, to me, IBD is psoriasis of the gut and psoriasis is IBD of the skin. It's a very simple analogy. So that's sort of the analogy is really here. I mean, this slide says it all. This actually shows you why different drugs work in different diseases and not. And although blocking TNF is attractive, but hey, you're probably going to get better effect if you go to the true targeted biology, right? TNF to me is untargeted. Yeah. It's hypothesis generating. IL-23, IL-17, IL-6, IL-1 is hypothesis driven. So if you want to look at it another way, which is another diagram that they have in this article, is this. So you can see here that everything, no matter what disease it is, I can make it smaller because it's very big. All the different diseases, you can see they all end in TNF, which is the common, what we call the common effector phase. But along the way, you can see that IL-23 is sort of common to psoriatics, Crohn's disease, UC, psoriasis. You can see 17 is also overlapping between ANGSPON. So that's why IL-17 also works in psoriasis and angst bond, but not for IBD. Now, there's a reason for that. Yeah.
Right. Now, I think one of the things we talked about in San Diego was, I guess, the prospect of more and more of these drugs coming on the market and really targeting treatment. And so we have first response more often than not. But I assume not everyone will respond. Why couldn't somebody respond?
Because there are non-IL-23 genetics. There are maybe just like, you know, we think everybody has it, but there's non-responders. So we need to go to the next target and understand what, because right now it's rudimentary. You're either 23 or you're not. That's basically what, or, you know, TNF we think is everybody, but now we have to go in and say, instead of blocking TNF, is there a group of patients where 23 would be the better, more targeted approach? And we need better precision tools to do that. Right now in the clinic, the most important tool, because testing everyone for IL-23 gene is not going to be the solution, but if you have a family history of psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis, the idea of you starting TNF before a 23 makes no sense. Yeah. Meaning you could, because it works in both, but why? You don't have to. We have a drug that is more targeted to the skin and the gut that is safer because it's more targeted and it's organ specific as opposed to a systemic inflammatory response like TNF. So the likelihood of you being having a better long-term outcome if we choose 23 wisely is only beneficial in both a safety and efficacy perspective. So I think, so to try and figure out, that's what we got to do moving forward, is right now if you have a family history, as I noted, psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, angst, spawn, vitiligo, knowing what these 23 specific diseases are, it would be shameful to say, unless there's a merited, like someone's really sick, Remy is queen or king for many people, right? Infliximab is our go-to sort of gold standard. The JAKs are probably stepping up their game in UC, Rinvoq, et cetera. But at the moment, if you're looking specifically through the cytokine lens, where would you choose a TNF pathway versus a 23? Often TNF is chosen because it's the go-to for everybody. They have Humira samples in their office for Remy. They've been prescribing since 1998. It's easy. People don't understand the data around 23 maybe yet. Skyrizi just came out. We presented Miri. Hopefully it will be published and hopefully it will come out soon. But I think, you know, my sort of role for the next 5 years is to scream from the rooftops the idea that if you have a patient who has a family history of a 23 disease, please use 23 if you can. And what we're also finding out, which is super cool, and there's all this sort of eosinophilic type of diseases that are Th2, particularly in UC, and we have seen patients who actually get a skin, paradoxical skin reaction to TNF, and we call it a psoriasiform, which is a psoriasis-like, but it's actually a dermatitis, and it's a drug reaction. And if the number one predictor of that is if you have a personal history of eczema or a strong family history of eosinophilic type 2 diseases, you need to avoid a TNF and you should start at 23. So those are the two things I can tell you as of today that is in every clinic I have. I ask, my team knows, does this patient have a family history or personal history of psoriasis or psoriatic? No. Do they have a strong family history of atopic diseases, EOE, dermatitis, atopic derm? If so, genetically, they're a Th2 predominant responder. And if I give them TNF, there's a very good chance they will develop a dermatitis, a paradoxical overrunning of a Th2 response to a Th1 blockade. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Now, I guess with Rizzi just being approved after the meeting, but every time I've been to a gastro meeting, ustekinumab has kind of been the main, you know, main drug, main discussion point. And that's 12 and 23. What would is something just targeting 23 more effective hypothetically than, you know, the 12 and 23 and ustekinumab and others?
So what I'd say to you is, based on the SKYRIZI data, without having a head-to-head, because we're going to wait for that, everybody's doing a Crohn's head-to-head. Janssen is going against themselves. It should give you a hint that they believe they're betting on 23 to be better than 12-23. So in my hands today, I would have to say that unless a patient doesn't want three IV infusions or I can't get SKYRIZI approved, to be fair, in Crohn's disease, I'm not sure the role of STELARA in any way, shape, or form at the moment. And you see, of course, until we have proven otherwise and have MIRI available or any of the others. But when we saw in Janssen in their phase 2 study called Galaxy Program, where they went and used ustekinumab as a reference arm, when you got into the deeper, more durable endpoints, such as endoscopic and mucosal healing, 23 blockade was superior to IL-12-23 blockade. Granted, it was not powered to show, it wasn't a head-to-head, but if you look at the height of the bars, you definitely could see at face value that it appears that there may be a biologic benefit to blocking 23 only. And that's what we're going with in terms of our review of the data. When you look at SKYRIZI, 20% of patients who went into SKYRIZI were STELARA non-responders, failures, however we define them, lost insurance, hard to say, but non-responders by definition, that they had a very similar induction response to though it looked like anyone who had failed at least two biologics. So it looked very similar. Granted, it's only 20%. It's capped at that, and X amount of those go into maintenance. So you're not looking at a huge patient population. But what I can tell you is they did improve. So in a subset, a meaningful subset. So obviously, maybe there's two reasons. One, that blocking 12 somehow negatively impacts blocking 23. Possibly, maybe by doing something with TNF blockade. It's hard to know. There's a biologic explanation somewhere out there, and someone way smarter than I could actually tell you that answer. Or there's probably two here, that we finally got the dose right. And it's impossible to go into maintenance without the right dose. And all of the 23s, MIRI, guselkumab, risankizumab, I think we got the induction dosing right finally. And I think that's why you're going to see better data. Now, does it mean that it's just that? Or is there also a biologic reason that blocking 12 is not fantastic and doesn't help the 23 case, you know, or 23 cause? So that's the question. Yeah.
Do you think, because with the existing biologics, not with everything, but with a lot of them, it's Crohn's or UC. It's not both for a lot of the existing drugs. Do you think the 23s are going to have more crossover effect, or are we going to be in a similar situation where, you know, drug A will work for Crohn's, drug B will work for UC?
If you look at some preliminary data, even from RISA trial, and we presented at DDWN at ECHO, and we looked at location, I will tell you, and my feeling, even if you look at STELARA, it does better if you look at it in UC, because it's agnostic to whether you failed TNF or not, right? So it was actually our biofailures performed very similar. So the question on the table is, could we say the same thing about USTA and Crohn's? And the answer is no, actually. If they had failed a TNF, they were 50% less likely to be in remission. So question on the table remains is that, are there a subset of patients who are more colonic versus ileal only? And if you look at the breakdown in Fortify or in Motivate and Advance, you do see actually a propensity for the colonic involvement, whether it be ileal colon or colon alone, did better or had a better outcome than ileal only. So I do believe that because of this predominance of Th2 in the UC and a little bit of Th9, there's a little bit of a difference in the biology of a colonic colonic itis, and that would be Crohn's colonic itis or UC itis, whatever one it is. And when you look at some of the papers out there, they definitely say that there's maybe more IL-17 involved in UC, IL-23 in UC than in than in Crohn's, there is this IL-13 prospect that is much more dominant in UC. So I've been using a lot of things like IL-4 blockade and Dupixent in patients who have these types of allergic or eczema type reactions to TNF. Rather than taking them off the TNF, I'm playing with the IL-4 pathway, for example. So I'm not your typical, this isn't your grandmother's gastroenterologist kind of approach to IBD. I actually am very active. This is my entire focus right now is this. So this is what I talk about every day. We're even doing skin testing to see if we can identify pathways in the skin before they start a biologic and look at the skin as a mirror of what's going on immunologically in the gut. So lots of really incredible things happening because IL-23 I think is a marker in the skin to tell you what your gut is going to do. So lots of cool stuff. So I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg. And I think understanding that it will be probably as simple as TNF or not, or maybe IL-23 or not. And if it's not, what are you going to choose? That's probably going to be the front door. And then you're like, oh, do I have to open another door? not sure. We'll see. But does that help to sort of set where I think the field is heading?
Yeah. And I just have one more question. Basically how I started this is, risankizumab. Do you think the ultimate success of, let's say, the family of IL-23s is largely going to be reliant on the success and the continued studies and safety data and efficacy data of risankizumab, since it's kind of the start of this?
Say it again. Do I think what?
Do you think the success of risankizumab long-term, as we continue to do studies with it, as we continue to look at it and compare it, do you think the ultimate success of IL-23s kind of rely on what happens with risankizumab and how
performs? I think it set the bar really high. I mean, it was the first Crohn's drug ever in the regulatory environment to ever have to reach endoscopic response at 12 weeks. Are you kidding? Let alone at week 52, right? I mean, the bar has been set. I know the MIRI data very well, as you've seen it. We talked about it. I mean, I think all bars are going to be set. Gus is going to look good as well, I'm sure, when we see it. We already see it in that combo study that they did, the Vegas study of golimumab plus Gus that was presented at 12 weeks. We already saw that it separated out, that Gus did better than TNF. That's another example of sort of thinking about the fact that 23 may be better. It's closer to the front door, right? So it's closer to this way than it is that way. So I think that Sky sort of allowed everybody some visibility into how incredible this target could be, even in the sickest patients. Some of them, it was their eighth biologic. I mean, are you kidding me? And the fact that it met that, imagine how it's going to be when I start a new patient, newly diagnosed with, I mean, insanity. So I do think that it's just the start of us all sort of being preachers and doing sermons at most of the meetings saying, we are pivoting. The front door is at 23, unless there's a reason why you shouldn't use it that, you know, I'm happy to help you solve over the next couple of years, you know, that kind of thing.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Dubinsky. As always, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all the latest news. Thank you so much for listening.